This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders, Brian Fonseca, and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. Politti here, Fonseca, Lenny. Spring, beautiful weather out there. We've got the usual stuff. It's football scrimmage, another Dylan Harper. I mean, holy crap. We'll talk about that, Brian Fonseca. In the crowd, Brian, you were there. Got some grainy Zapruder-like video of Dylan Harper's big moment hitting another game-winning shot against the best players in his class. It's getting to be something crazy. But, I mean, talk about drumming up excitement for things yet to come. I think we should start football, though, right? I mean, we've got second scrimmage of the spring game coming up. I think Greg Schiano is using the typical coaching cliches when he says, like, things are starting to take shape, starting to see to focus in on things. I don't know. You guys were there at the scrimmage. You can kind of tell me what you can tell me without jeopardizing your health and safety next time you go down there. I mean, are we still feeling good about what we're watching?
I do. I still feel good about it. I think there's confidence in the quarterback play. Both Ethan Caligmanis and Gavin Wimsett, you can see some confidence there. I think what he meant when he said it was starting to take shape is that everything that they kind of envisioned for the spring is coming to form, right? Like, they knew these guys were going to be competing and very close and all that. So I think everything we've seen fits that mold. And I think they're very happy with how the offense has looked. Receivers has been a big boost. Some young guys have really stepped up. And the caveat there is that the offense has looked good, of course. Just keep in mind that the defense mostly defense's second string guys are playing a lot of the best players on offense. I hate saying that, like, the offense looks great. I don't want that on my ledger for a freezing cold take in October. But I think at this point, like, based on the past two years of scrimmages that I've seen compared to this year, I feel very confident saying that, like, the offense does look better than it has the last 2 years of scrimmages.
I mean, I don't know, bro. I always look for things that guys can star in the spring and then disappear. We've seen that. I can go through some names, the players in the past who we thought were going to be, based on what we saw in the spring, we thought they would be great players in the season and they disappeared. I guess this is the second time I'm seeing the names KJ Duff, Ben Black, receivers who weren't in the mix last year. I don't know. They seem to be the names, right? And I get it. Maybe this is just the spring thing. But am I wrong to say that they are ahead of schedule? That perhaps is this the story of the spring, these young receivers?
I would say so. Greg Schiano certainly made it a point to bring it up during his press conference. I think those three guys, Ben Black, KJ Duff, and Fama Ture, each had nice scrimmages. This was my first scrimmage, obviously, of the spring, and those guys really jumped out to me, which mm-hmm. kind of, when you bank two, you know, you got to take these things all with a grain of salt, but when you bank two scrimmages in a row, you look pretty good. That's always an encouraging sign. But yes, I am with you. Always be weary of spring all-stars because they do not always turn into fall starters and regulars. So I would caution the same thing for people going to the spring game next Saturday. All good signs are good, but they are not definitive. And I think I'm not sure what to take exactly away from this. I don't know if it's Greg Schiano coach speak or not, but he said something to the effect of, this is the first spring since they've been back where they're playing football and not just going through plays. That quote seemed to have resonated a bit for some fans. It left me a little scratching my chin. I think that's a positive thing, but I'm not quite sure what he means by that.
Yeah, that's oh, let me write this down. This is, I love when we get, this is new Shianoology here. This is like, I'm gonna have to add, this is like when Webster at the, they put in new words in the dictionary, like there's all of a sudden, like, you know, bracketology was just added to the dictionary last year. This is a new one here. This, I have not heard this, but maybe repeat it for me again. So I have it. It's, they're playing football, not just.
So this is for the first time, this is not a direct quote, but paraphrasing. This spring is the first time since they've been back where he's felt that they are playing football, because previously it felt like they were just going through plays or performing plays or something to that point. What he's trying to say, I think, is like they're playing more freely and they're not thinking so much and they're not just kind of trying to go through what they're told, but they're playing more instinctively, which to me indicates a better understanding and better players. That's what I can take away. Again, this could be completely coach speak with a lot of the stuff. Like, I agree with the start taking shape quote about the quarterbacks. When I first heard that, I was like, is he saying that someone is kind of going ahead of the other in the competition? I think this thing is going to run into the training camp. So I think that's, you guys are probably right. It's kind of just like we're moving in the right direction kind of deal.
Pat, you agree with the analysis?
Yeah, I'm generally good with that. I just think that the totality of the team is better. There's better depth. There's veteran guys at each position. Some young guys that are going to be good, if not this year, in a few years. The defense is very experienced. So I think when you have all that together, there's just more confidence. And like we've been saying, they set the floor last season, going to a bowl, winning the bowl. And I think they just have a little more mustard in their step, right? Like, I think they just have a little more confidence. And I think you're seeing it across the board.
So the spring game to me is very interesting. And I again, with the caveat of not reading too much into spring, I think both quarterbacks have a lot here at stake in this game. Tell me if you agree with this. You get fans in the stadium. The Gavin Whipsett's the incumbent. If he goes out there and plays a good scrimmage, a good game, leads you up in some scores, makes some big throws, I mean, you would think that would set the narrative of going into the summer into training camp would be that he is still at least quarterback 1A, right? Like, he has not lost the job. But if he goes out, plays poorly, if Ethan is by far the more accurate passer, if Gavin makes some bad throws, I mean, then you're going to start looking at what the narrative of this thing's going to be for people, which is going to be that this is already over. You guys agree with that? Even if it's not over, even if Brink Shannon spends the rest of the summer, if he goes to the Big Ten media days, if he's talking up competition, if he takes it all the way to the Howard game, I mean, this is real. This practice is good. The spring game is going to shape the narrative here.
I totally agree with that. And I think it's, quarterback is a big confidence position. And when quarterbacks see the field, are confident in their decision-making, they're better players. And I think that Gavin now with this challenge, right? Like, that's a big part of why they wanted to bring in the competition, to like make sure that he could be more confident and make these throws. So I do agree with what you're saying. I just think that we still got a really long way to go, but he could definitely take a big step forward with a great performance. I just don't want to, like, what I would fear is people losing confidence in Gavin if he plays poorly. I don't know if you can just brush everything aside based on one spring scrimmage.
Sure.
And shape your neck. But obviously everyone's going to say, obviously the outside noise, we block out the outside noise, but I truly feel that, like, college kids, they see it. Their parents read these things.
Oh yes.
It's way more infectious than people think.
Brian, what do you think?
I think the scrimmage, as it always does, will shape the public narrative, the fan narrative of how guys look. I think it will be a huge piece of the puzzle of the internal narrative of guys who have seen these guys compete for 15 practices in the spring and have an idea of where things stand moving forward. I agree with Pat that the public narrative does have some sway, and it does kind of – it will shape the discussions for the next 5-6 months, right? Like, this is what people are going to be talking about when there's nothing else happening. No matter, I don't know, but I do think it could set the tone for the competition entering the summer. And again, I would be shocked if Greg Schiano says anything other than, we had a good spring, both quarterbacks did some good things, we're gonna keep this competition ongoing through the summer and into training camp. It is the only logical thing to do. I think it's probably the reasonable thing, right? Because again, unless Ethan Calliope-Mattis goes out there and looks like an elite quarterback compared to Gavin Wimsett, I think it doesn't make any sense to kind of call the competition at this point. So, I totally agree with you guys. It will set the public narrative. It will have some impact on the internal narrative, and we will be talking about this on our podcast for the next 6 months. And hopefully it will not shape our narrative, but we know how we are. It probably will.
All right. So going through the young players, I was not at the scrimmage, but one of a well-placed person tells me there are some young players who performed admirably during that scrimmage. I'm going to throw a name at you. You tell me if this is true, if you can talk about him. Kenny Fletcher,
yeah. Has looked good at tight end. Won't say how many catches he had.
I thought I was going to throw another name at him, I think. Just looking at your expression. You're surprised?
I said, I just want to say, like,
did you think I was going to say another name? No.
It was a legit, and Greg Schiano used the word, it was an awesome description of the tight end competition. He called it a keen competition at tight end. And I think I really think that's realistic, that Kenny Fletcher and Mike Higgins are very close in this competition. And Victor Konopka's in it as well. But I think those two guys have looked really good.
Anybody on defense, Brian? What do you like from the defense? I know a lot of those guys aren't playing.
Really quickly on Kenny Fletcher, I think the tight end position is in an interesting point where you're looking at the spring transfer portal window. There aren't that many elite guys entering the portal. And the ones that are, as you can see by the guys that Rutgers has offered, CJ West from Kent State, he's getting interest from LSU. He's going on a visit to Wisconsin. Like, good players at this portion of the portal, much like Cam Spencer was in basketball last year, are at a premium, right? So if you find that Kenny Fletcher and Mike Higgins are having good springs and you're encouraged by their progress, maybe you don't have to go into the portal and just grab a body at tight end, kind of like they did with Sean Bowman last year. So I think how they perform in the spring, how they do in the spring game, the signs they're showing could kind of impact where Rutgers is pursuing guys in the portal for these late grabs, especially when they probably have to fill a spot at defensive line with Renee Congo leaving. I'll transition this into things that I'd be looking for in the spring game. Like, I remember Bo Maskow having a good spring last year, and he didn't really do much during the season because he was dealing with an NCAA issue. But when he played for the first time in the Pinstripe Bowl, you really saw him kind of pop and have some impact play. So I would say that the spring game would be less than looking at the proven veteran guys and kind of trying to spy out, like, the young players who might not have a big role next year, but, you know, in 6 months when they make a big play in an important game, you could think, oh, I remember seeing him in the spring game. So that to me is the value of this opportunity for fans.
All right. Anything else we need about the spring game? Give me your 4-1-1 of fans going, sit in the stadium. What should they expect?
I think you're going to get an incomplete view of the offense without Kyle Manungai in there, obviously, right? The whole offense, the identity of the offense is going to be a run first offense. And obviously you'll see some ball carriers, Sam Brown being back. And
does he get the first carry? Sam Brown's the first one?
Yeah, I would say so. So I think it's hard to fully put a great scope on the offense without how effectively they're going to run the ball. But I think what you will see on the offense is you're going to see that the receiver play is better. And I'm very confident in saying that. And it's not just the young guys. I think, there's some veteran guys. Christian Dremel looks good again. He had a big season last year. That's probably not a surprise. But, you know, Nassim Brantley's back off his NCAA eligibility issue. So I just think generally there's a huge arc and range of ability at receiver. And I think that's really going to play itself out. So I would pay attention to the receivers on offense, and then defensively, linebackers, who are going to be like the 3-4 guys behind. Obviously Tyreen Powell, when he comes back, is going to be, you know, one of the best players, but I think there's room there for, you know, some new faces at linebacker. I think that's a big one. And then just in the secondary, how do they replace, you know, Longer Beam's out with an injury, so he won't be out there. So you're gonna see like those 3-4-5 ranked cornerbacks. Al-Shadi Salam is a name to keep on your radar. Bo Maskow, like Brian said, is a good one. And just some young guys and even guys that have made the switch from receiver to defensive back, not necessarily a corner, but at safety, like Jesse O'Fury. So a lot. There's a lot to unpack, and we'll do that all week. So stay tuned for that.
All right, good stuff on football. Let's jump the hoops. And I feel like we talk about, like, this is the last, the Jordan Brand Classic. Is that the last high school all-star game, Brian, that we, I feel like every week there's, I'm looking up and Dylan Harper's got 30 points. He's hitting a game winning shot. He's the MVP. And Carmelo Anthony is talking about how he's the second coming of Kobe Bryant. I mean, I don't know. I guess isn't that every week, but I mean, it's pretty freaking amazing.
Yes, this is the last game of the All-Star Circuit. You will not find me with a Dateline in El Paso, Texas, or whatever. Or Portland, Maine. I will say a couple things that no one cares about. Jordan Brand Classic was, of the three, the worst run media-wise. It was a bit of a zoo.
Oh, yes.
And it was – they had MCs on the court, similar to the SummerSlam event at Harlem. I hate
those things, yeah.
And they had that. They had – blaring music. They had like two different concerts, and I got home last night at 10 o'clock. My brain felt like it was going to explode my skull. And also, I did not know who the rapper was that was doing the post game concert, and all the kids were really into it. And that was the first time I've ever felt this old. I feel washed up and just, I want to ask for forgiveness for all the old jokes I made about you because they're coming to me soon.
That's good. That's fair. I accept it. Forgiveness accepted.
Thank you. I appreciate it. As for the game, Dylan Harper looked awesome, which has been a theme for all of these All-Star events when he's playing with the best players in his class. He has looked, at worst, the second or third best player, and at best, like he was last night, and the way he was telling everybody after he hit his game winner, like the best. What you love about Dylan Harper is the confidence he has, and he's showing it. And I love this, and fans are going to love this too. He very clearly wanted to maybe not show up, but go against Cooper Flagg, who is the number one player in the class, who, as soon as he reclassified into 2024, took Dylan Harper's spot atop the composite rankings. Dylan Harper was number one until Cooper Flagg went down to 2024. And there was a moment in the second half, they're coming out of a timeout. Dylan Harper's on the defensive side of the floor. He's talking to a teammate, and he's pointing down the court at Cooper Flagg, who was about to get the inbound, as if to say, that's my guy. I'm guarding him. And he hit a three-pointer over him in a series where he hit back-to-back-to-back threes. His second one was over Cooper Flagg. And as it goes in, he's just jawing at Cooper Flagg, talking to him, talking to the opposing bench. And then when he hits the game-winning three, he turns around to one of those MCs, and he lifts his left index finger, and he keeps saying back and forth, I'm number one, I'm number one, I'm number one. So
as in, like, number one in the class or number one in the draft? Just whatever. Just number one in general.
I'm the number one player on this floor. Wow. These guys can guard me. The bench cleared and everyone hugged him, and it was a whole thing. And I think Dylan clearly wanted to show not only yesterday, but throughout the past month of All-Star events, that he was the best player in the class. And you mentioned Melo. It was impossible to talk to any of the players from the game, but I managed to catch Carmelo before he left through the back end. And I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, can I ask you about Dylan Harper? And he said, give me your best Dylan Harper question. You get one question. And I fumbled out some question I can't even remember. And I think even if I asked him when is Dylan Harper's birthday, he would have answered the same way. Essentially, he said he's loved his development because he's watched his son, Kyan, plays at Long Island Lutheran. He's a year younger than Dylan. So he's watched Dylan play maybe a dozen times over the years. He loves his development, and he feels like Rutgers is getting something special next year. And when you hear that from a guy like Carmelo, the 10th highest scorer in NBA history, a bucket getter back in his day, you got to feel really good about that if you're a Rutgers fan.
Right. I just loved it. And it's like, again, I get it. We keep on spring. Nothing matters. It's exhibition basketball, exhibition football, this whole podcast. Just forget we even talked about this. Just forget it. Still, he does, like, you watch a little bit of it. Like, he's got an NBA step back three. Like, all this time, all the time I've spent here circling Jordan Durkat's 27% shooting from three, he's going to be looking at shooting the threes. That's it. The question's answered, Pat. This is going to be Dylan Harper's team, not East Bailey's team, not Jordan Durkak's team, not Jaden Jones, not whoever they bring in. It's pretty clear to me at this point.
That's great. I'm glad you got there. Usually makes sense when the point guard, the team revolves around the point guard. I don't know that if I was generally thinking about basketball, maybe, you know, he has to touch the ball every possession, whatever. I'm not going to get into X's and O's here.
Right.
But I just keep coming back to this Dylan Harper thing. And one question I keep thinking to myself is, like, we've been around, or I've been around, for Kyrie Irving, Karl Anthony Towns.
Yes.
Right? Like, bona fide guys that you knew were phenoms. Yeah. And I'm starting to think that, like, Dylan Harper might have as much hype, if not more, than even both those guys. And I remember Carl Towns was like, it was unfathomable that he was going to college even, you know?
I'm
like,
trying to remind myself, and Kevin Armstrong, who of course has covered this stuff for us and for other places much deeper in the weeds than I have. Like he pointed out, I just remember like Wagner from Camden was, you know, he there was that level of hype with him last year. I get it. Like I am only paying attention to this because of Dylan Harper. Like I didn't watch the Jordan Brand Classic last year, 5 years ago. I don't think it existed last year. I'm not paying attention to it granularly like I am with him. That said, I think it is to me, you're right. Like this, that like I certainly have not seen it for anybody. Certainly not if we stayed at Rutgers, but I just feel like there's a different level. Brian, are you going to tell us that we're wrong?
No, I think Dylan Harper is. Here's what I said to someone recently. Like, I've watched Dylan Harper a dozen times. I have never seen him play bad, ever. And he always does something every game that leaves me raising my eyebrows. I don't think he's got this guy that's like Carl Anthony Towns and Kyrie would dominate games, like just go crazy. Like, I think their skill level is a bit higher than Dylan's, but I do think Dylan's floor is higher than any kid in that class. He will always put in a good game, and every once in a while, special performances like last night happen. I agree with you that the ball is going to be in his hands all the time. It is Dylan Harper's team. He's going to be the best, most consistent player on that team. Ace Bailey will have the best nights. Ace Bailey next year will have some nights that will stand in Rutgers basketball history, like the greatest nights. But Dylan Harper will be the guy that will be remembered as it's his team because he will be the consistent 20 points, you know, 7 assists. Like he will be the guy for the most part. And I think you make a really good observation that this is Dylan Harper's team because, and we can transition this into portal talk. And when people are worried about like who they're getting, who's going to be the center, where's the shooter, who are the guys we're putting around these talented players, oftentimes they forget the fact that they're bringing in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, and they are going to fill a lot of these concerns that people have. Like, you watch what he did last night, he's going to do that for Rutgers next year. Probably not to the same degree, right? I think it's also important to caution people that he's doing this in an all-star setting against mostly lackadaisical defense or more lackadaisical defense you're going to see in the Big Ten, but they're still very highly talented kids that are going to perform at a high level. So just keep that in mind. When you start panicking about who's going to be the center,
someone's got to play. All right. Someone's got to be center. We don't know that question. We do. One thing we didn't, this happened after we recorded last week, the name Jane Jones, like that's an interesting one. And like that kind of like under radar guy who kind of snuck into the rack. You broke that story about him playing here. He's going to him coming here for a visit. He looks like he really does fit the bill. You know, a guy who's a much better shooter, experienced. What's the latest with him? He liked his visit, but he's still going to go to Texas and a couple other places.
Oklahoma. And okay. Butler were the two visits he had lined up without a date afterwards. But Jane Jones, to me, is the perfect fit for this roster. I think if you get Jane Jones and center, you have, like, an elite, elite roster. I think he liked his visit. It was his first time he's ever visited a school. He's from Long Beach, California, grew up there, born and raised. He went to Long Beach State. That was the only school he visited in the recruiting process. Rutgers was the first time he ever visited a school outside of his hometown, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Really?
Yes.
That is fascinating.
And he liked his visit a lot. He liked his visit a lot. He liked New Jersey. He liked Rutgers. He liked Steve Peichel. He liked the staff. He liked a lot of what he heard. But obviously, he didn't commit on the visit. And I know that's obviously going to worry some people. He was very under the radar.
Is that Steve Peichel going into the portal and just really, is that his staff just looking for diamonds in the roughs? Do you think what's your sense?
Yes, because a lot of the first three commits they got were guys that had connections to the staff. Right. Whether that's Smoke Williamson, whether that's TJ Thompson finding a guy from New Jersey, Jane Jones has no connection to the staff. He was just a guy that Rutgers did some real due diligence and found a guy at a low major program with really good stats. He played in the NCAA tournament. He helped Long Beach State do that incredible run to the NCAA tournament where they carried their fired coach into the tournament and then the AD took credit for firing the coach, which is just a classic as a motivation tactic.
Yeah.
Just a great AD move right there. This was a great find from Rutgers that if they do get him, he would be very similar to the Cam Spencer story of like an under the radar guy no one heard about with great numbers who can come to the high major level and perform really well. The question is, will they land him? Obviously, he has interest from Oklahoma and Butler. Maybe once people find out he's visiting Rutgers, that game gives him a little bit more attention from schools who maybe had not thought about him or heard about him. We shall see. I think Rutgers has a chance. I would not call it a lock by any stretch. But I do think if Rutgers does get him, he is just a perfect, perfect fit for what they need. And he's just a classic Steve Peichel player who can actually hit some threes.
Any insight on the center?
So here is, I wanted to bring this up, and I didn't tell you guys this beforehand on purpose. I have a bit of a theory. I'm reading some tea leaves here. What if they don't get a center? What if
they don't get a center?
What if they really like Emmanuel Ogbele is doing? Steve Peichel on his podcast with Jerry Recco was very complimentary of the kind of offseason he's been having. It's his first full offseason in a couple of years because he tore his ACL last year, so he didn't really have a summer. What if they feel like he's progressing really well and he's that big center they need? What if they're really high on Nathan Somerville and what he can do as a freshman? Zach Martini, play a little bit of stretch five, stretch four. Maybe they look at the center market, which is, I would compare it to the quarterback market of football, like really, really, really expensive players. They aren't able to find a solution with the budget they have and they roll with what they got. What would you guys say if that happened?
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
I don't know, Pat. What do you think?
My gut would say that it doesn't fit the Steve Peichel mold of teams, right? Like, he's a defensive guy. He needs guys to play physically around the rim. They need that big defender. My gut says, like, it would be completely new. They'd throw out the chalkboard in that situation and kind of just start fresh, which maybe isn't a bad idea. But my gut says it kind of changes the whole philosophy of Peichel's.
I agree. And Bolle, I'm just not certain he is a Big Ten. He's like a developmental player still. Give me your starting five in this scenario, Brian.
Right. So in this scenario, what they have right now, are we assuming that the roster is closed now? Because I still think they'll get another guy.
We're assuming they're not getting a center. I'll even give you Jaden Jones, and that's it. They do not add a center of any note.
Well, for the sake of this exercise, let's just say who I would start at center. I think Emmanuel Ogbele would start, no? Okay. He's an older guy, veteran guy. He has the size they'd like out of a center.
He's not going to play more than 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, they would all split minutes between Ogbele, Somerville, and Martini at the five. I think that would be
– at the your end of the game lineup, Martini is playing five and
– maybe you need to get a stop and you put Ogbele as the rim protector there. I don't know. Listen, I'm not saying it's the optimal solution and I'm not saying it's what's going to happen because I do think they're still perusing the market.
Right, but you can't even give me – just give me the scenario. Like, what does it look like? You can't – I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is it – give me what it looks like without that guy. I guess that's what I'm trying to find. You have Dylan. You have Jeremiah Williams, Ace. You've got Ace out. Ace is playing four. Martinez at the five. Okay, bringing one of the new guards, Dirk Kack or the kid from Michigan. Okay. Is that your – you feel good about that lineup?
Well, you're asking me, you know, like there are different scenarios. Obviously, you could be playing different kinds of teams. We'll play small ball or versus a major center in the Big Ten. So I don't know.
Your best lineup. What is your best lineup then?
You're assuming Jaden Jones is here, right?
Yes.
Dylan Harper, Jaden Jones. And this has been a tight game.
Yes.
Last minute.
Tight game. Last minute. Yeah. Playing Illinois. So
Dylan Harper, Jeremiah Williams, Jaden Jones, Ace Bailey, Zach Martini.
Okay.
That's who I would go with. Again, this is a complete hypothetical, and I want to reiterate this. Rutgers is still looking for a center. Mm-hmm. Rutgers would probably still like to add a center. I am just bringing up that I think it's possible going with what they got. I don't think that's impossible. And I think I just bring that up because I know everyone, the first question we get when you ask for questions on the service is, who's going to be the center we're getting?
No, that's the second question. The first question is, any chance Cliff's coming back? That's the first question every week. The second question is, who's going to be the center?
Let me answer that unequivocally. Omori, and Muat Magg are not walking through that door, fellas. They're not coming back.
They've replaced Muat Magg. I'm surprised that's a question. They've already replaced him. Okay.
But no, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. Cliff is not coming back. Cliff is going to make $1 million somewhere. He's not coming back.
Yes, right. So, like, I do think you're on, I will say this, your theory, you're on the right track, because I do agree with you looking at that market, because there's only like 15 guys. You know, so they're not going to get one of the top guys if they're going to settle for someone who is of the same level of Ogbole. If they are high on Summergoen, we don't know. We've kind of dismissed him. We've kind of chalked him up as a developmental player. I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen him yet. I mean, there's a chance he could be a 15-minute again. Maybe you're right. That's not a bad theory. All right. Good basketball chat. Let's get some questions. We covered a lot of it, but there's always some good ones. And I like this one. We have someone, one of our texters. I was on the sidelines last weekend for the scrimmage. And I have a couple questions coming off of that, which is fascinating itself. I could just start doing this. I could start texting our own tech service and asking you guys questions. I didn't know they're good to try. I wonder if they're going to try to find this poor fella. And you better not be texting them questions. I don't think there's anything in here that's really good at any spoiler. But here's the question. If you're excited, what do you want to know? What's the deal with that guy following Greg around on the field, taking notes and giving directions over the PA? Is he Greg's personal secretary? It's interesting. Pat, you did some research on this, I understand.
Yes, I did some reporting, as reporters do. He is not Greg's assistant. That's a diff. There. Greg does have an assistant. This is not his assistant. This is Mike Shapley. He's director of equipment, and basically he helps Greg at practice, kind of doing whatever Greg needs. So a lot of times you'll see him with a megaphone kind of barking out orders that Greg's barking in his ear. It's a very interesting position, and I'm glad this question came up because it made me think about it too. And I think it's a unique situation. I don't know if it's unique. I think it's probably used at every college campus, but really interesting. And when you hear him on the practice field, they have all the sayings that they just say over and over and over again. The ball is the program. The ball is the program. So that's Mike in the megaphone saying these things so Greg can rest his voice, I guess. And all the phrases, chin, 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 and like family trust chop. Like, you just hear it over and over again. And it's Mike with the megaphone. And it's really interesting.
Somewhere in the Hale Center is like a little room where players who step out of line just get like, they just, the door's closed and they're put in, and just those words are just flashed on a screen until they step out, and it's family trust program. The ball is the program. Chop, chop, chop. All right. Good question, anonymous scrimmage attendee. Let's see what else we got here. KJ Duff came up. That's a name. I mean, is, and they wanted to know, is that a product of the depth right now, the situation, injuries, or is he emerged as one of the big guys? What's your thought?
Someone is going to subpoena our text service to find out every number to discover that scrimmage attendee that is texting us. And
we will protect you to the end. There will be there's no Oprah. You cannot Oprah NJ Advanced Media's text numbers. We're going to protect you. Anyone who wants to text us from scrimmages, Your secret's safe with us.
That's right. KJ Duff looked good. I think Greg Schiano made that clear. I think regardless of the depth, I think he's shown enough in the spring to be a potential guy in training camp who could fight for playing time. I don't know how many snaps he'll play during the season, but I don't think it's going to be a situation where he's a freshman that's going to redshirt. I think he will have an opportunity to earn some snaps if he continues on this trajectory.
All right. Here's a question about development. It seems like football does a great job of player development, Pierce, Dremel, DBs, et cetera, quarterback. Not sure I see the same thing from the Hoops program. Some guys who have developed, Gio, Caleb, but in 4 years, Cliff never had any offensive game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is that a coaching issue or a player fault? I guess I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of a little dismissing some of Ron Harper Jr. We can't give Steve Peichel credit for that. Gio, Caleb. I mean, these guys they certainly did develop from nobody recruits or small time recruits to really, really, really good college players. What do you think, Brian? Is there a development issue in one program compared to the other?
The only two teams in the last 35 years who have been to the NCAA tournament with Rutgers on their chest were built entirely of
players. Developmental, yeah.
Ron Harper Jr., Caleb McConnell, Watt Mag, Miles Johnson, need I go on? Like, yeah. Cliff Omori developed into one of the best rim protectors in college basketball. Sure, the guy can't hit a layup to save his life, but he's an elite defender. Like, what are we talking about, people? Like, here's the thing where I can kind of see where they're coming from. Rutgers has built its entire program off of developmental guys, so you can really pick guys to prove your point in either direction. We shall say Caleb McConnell, Geo Baker, Ron Harper Jr., Mawat Mag, Miles Johnson, all these guys. You could say Derek Simpson, Antoine Wolfolk, Souf Mensa, Issa Cham, all these other lower-level guys that showed up and never developed, right? That's the issue. When you get 10 guys of that caliber and it goes 5-5, whatever side you want to choose. I don't think it's much of an issue. And it's not going to be an issue next year anyway, because everyone there is either a one-and-done NBA player or a seventh-year senior with 1 year of eligibility remaining. So that's going to be a concern for maybe the 2025-2026 cycle once we get there.
Yes, thank goodness for that. All right, a couple more women's hoops questions. A lot of questions about women's hoops. I think there's some concern. What's going on with women's hoops? Some more roster instability than I would have guessed. One question. The other one is Rutgers women's basketball just signed a 5-star recruit. What is the women's team's pitch to high schoolers right now? And do you see Keith Washington as more of a recruiter or an X's and O's coach? Thanks. Fellas, I get the sense that this is sort of a really important summer for that program. It's great to get a 5-star recruit. And looking at the highlights there, looks like they've got a really good one. But, I mean, this is not a Dylan Harper situation. This is not someone who's going to be able to, you know, take over the team entirely. You've got to fill in some gaps around her, obviously. And we're in a situation, again, where there's just not a lot of talent in that program. Losing and to lose a player to a transfer to Maryland, to me, was a red flag. I don't know. Fill in the blanks. What am I missing?
I would say, to answer the first question, the pitch to high school players, transfers, et cetera, would be this could be, you could come here and not only play immediately, make a huge impact immediately, right? Like you could be someone who's, you know, playing most of the game, scoring at a high level. I think it's very attractive, to recruits and transfers, no question. So, but you, absolutely, you made 100%, you're 100% right saying there's more to this than just finding a player here and there. There's no totality to the roster. There's definitely holes and gaps. And I think until they find some success, it's going to be tough to bring in that totality that's needed to win on a consistent level. So it's kind of like a chicken or the egg, catch 22.
Right.
A few things. Coquise came into a very hard situation, as we've rehashed many times, with the end of the Steven Stringer era. She had 7 players on her first roster, I believe, or 8. She didn't fill every roster spot for last year either. It's important to remember we are in the transfer portal era, and that is true for all sports. Rutgers basketball is in its greatest era in maybe half a decade, and they struggle with NIL. Women's basketball is in one of its worst periods in the past 25 years, so you can imagine that NIL is not aplenty at that program either, and that matters in women's basketball. Maryland is a better program than Rutgers, at least recently, since they've joined the Big Ten, so it's not... It's kind of an upgrade for Smichael. Smichael didn't play for the last, 2 months of the year. So that was a bit of a unique situation, which it's funny this question comes up. It's timely that we're recording the podcast now. They just landed a transfer from Boston College, her last year of eligibility, JoJo Lacey, who was a former top 50 recruit, the equivalent of a 4-star. So that's a good get.
Yeah.
Former 5-star in the class of 2020.
There you go.
They still need to get a lot more players, just bodies, to fill the portal, because this texter mentioned they did lose a lot of bodies in the portal. But now you have a former 5-star, you have an incoming 5-star who, no, is not the Caitlin Clark top 5 level program changing player, but a 5-star is a 5-star. I think it's an important season to kind of show that things are going in the right direction. I don't know if Coquise is particularly in danger. I think she has a long leash given, again, the mess she inherited. But I think at some point you got to show that things are moving forward and not stagnating or at worst getting worse.
You mentioned Caitlin Clark. I'm going to give you the little heart thing here. I'm giving, you can't see in the podcast because we're still audio only, but I'm giving the little controversy for one of my colleagues in Indianapolis for flashing the heart symbol at Caitlin Clark. It's kind of cringy. I do that to Greg Schiano all the time. You just have not seen it. When he walks in, I just flash him a little heart and he just winks at me. You guys haven't noticed this?
It's cute, I dare right? you. I dare you to do it in his first press conference of just, training camp.
It'd be great. That would be really funny. What would he do if I flashed him the heart?
I think he'd like short circuit because he's used to a very professional Rutgers beat where we don't do any of those shenanigans. And he just, I don't know what he'd flash it back.
I think he'd flash it back. I think you're wrong. I think he'd appreciate it. I think he needs a little love sometimes. I think he would be, thanks there. Give me a little wink.
As we said, he's been very
happy,
very personable, yes. Very happy this spring. This could be the perfect time to flash the heart.
Perfect transition to our last question, which I love. Someone said, have you ever had a drink with Schiano? And yeah, I've had a beer or two with Greg. He is a, I don't know, have you guys ever had any, ever, is this, is you two, any, have you ever had a little hub action with Coach at one of these things? No, not yet?
Only breakfast beverages. One at Eric LeGrand's Coffee House the day it opened.
Gotcha. Okay. He's a great, if you ever have a chance, he is a super fun, I mean, you know, he's got a million stories. He's an engaging guy. He's a good guy to have a beer with, no question.
I'm sure they've thought of this before, but that feels like the easiest NIL sweepstakes thing of all time. You know, pay money to the collective and you get a chance to win a night at a bar with Greg Schiano where he tells bar stories. And obviously they'll cut him off after his third beer because they don't want to get too crazy, but it seems like it'd be a really fun time if you ask me.
Yes. I think that's probably happening behind the scenes, only it's a lot of money to have that. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. It's not a bad idea. They should do something like that. Raffle to have drinks with Greg for $1 million. All right. Good questions, everyone. What else do we got?
Okay. I did my research this week, and I want to run through some quick Olympic updates. As we said last week, lacrosse, both of them are cooked. It's done. It's over for both of them. They're both in the Big Ten tournament. Men's lacrosse, after losing their senior day game against Penn State, finished the regular season 7-6 and 1-4 in the Big Ten. They're playing Penn State again in a rematch of the first round. They're going to have to beat Penn State, then probably number 2 Maryland, then probably number 1 Johns Hopkins to make the NCAA tournament. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Women's lacrosse finished the regular season 7-9, 1-5 in Big Ten play. They're second to last in the conference. They're playing number 3 Maryland in the quarterfinals. They would have to beat the number 3, then the number 2, then the number 1 to make the NCAAs. That's probably not going to happen. Baseball swept by Iowa this weekend, fell to 3-9 in the Big Ten. And barring a complete sweep of the rest of the Big Ten season, probably needs to win the Big Ten tournament to make the NCAAs. Softball, though, won a series against Minnesota, 29-19, 10-3 in conference play, but their RPI is 92, which to me does not sound very good, or at least not good enough to make the NCAA tournament. So, but good news. I do have good news. Women's golf had their best ever performance at the Big Ten championships. They finished tied for 11th.
Tied for 11th is the best ever. How many teams are in there?
14.
Every school has a women's golf team? Okay.
So, look, that's the good news I got. And I don't know if Pat has the update on our favorite recurring segment, Alex Carlson. Pat, you got the numbers?
Yeah, I got it. Alex Carlson, the great miler on Rutgers track and field team. She already had the school record in the 1500. She improved that again. So she lowered her time there. It's now 4:14.04, pretty fast.
While out the door, while one foot across the finish line, the other foot out the door. She's doing this.
Pretty funny. When she won two gold medals at the Big Ten Championships indoors, a nice distance double there. As she crossed the finish line, she was doing the chop.
Was she really?
Amazing. Amazing.
That's great. Did you see her photo? She put a photo of her transferring to. Have you seen this? Like the photo of her transferring to Northern Arizona. She announced it, and she's like in a backyard sitting on a like the folding table. It looked like it needed either Ace Red Solo cups or that some Buffalo Bills fan was going to jump from like the top of an SUV on top of it to destroy it. That's what it looked like.
Yes, huge announcement. It just shows you how different some sports are treated in the transfer portal era and how things go and the way media covers these things. That's how the news came out.
Yeah.
We were the first to report it, by the way. We have been all over this Alex Carlson news cycle. And I think we're joking about this, but just to be clear, some people were like Northern Arizona, one of the top three, top
people,
five.
And by some people, you're talking about me, aren't you? Just say it. Some people like Politi were unaware that Northern Arizona.
You should know this.
I was unaware.
You need some Olympic training here. And
as our Olympic track writer, Steve Politi, is like,
one of the greatest American distance runners is a guy by the name of Lopez Lamont. You do know that name, right? Yeah. He was a lost boy of the Sudan, right? Became an American citizen, ran in Northern Arizona.
That's the I didn't know that.
It got some clout, and it's a huge distance running school.
I'm sorry.
Well, we will miss Alex Carlson and the recurring segment. Maybe we'll make Northern Arizona Corner our last bit of every podcast, just to update on every record she's broken there.
If you're still listening at this point of the podcast, that's what you get and deserve. One final thing: Nick Sirianna did not qualify for the Olympics, which was devastating to me. I watched it. Wouldn't look. He just, I mean, it's hard, man. That's a tough sport. Six slots. It's just, he faced the guy he beat for the national championship. It just wasn't there for him.
Yeah. And it's so unfortunate because he was really looking like the guy for 2020. And then he caught COVID the week of the trials and missed that. So it's really unfortunate for Soriano. It is noteworthy that Rutgers, obviously Nick wrestled at Rutgers, but then ended up transferring to Michigan for his final season. Rutgers did take back their Soriano pride, I guess is a good way to put it. Like, they claimed Soriano for the Olympic trials. There are a couple social media posts. So
that was nice.
Soriano got his Rutgers treatment there. So that is noteworthy.
Yeah.
There is hope for Cliff Omori and Watt Mag to one day be reclaimed by Rutgers basketball. What say you, fellas?
Or Paul McKay, right?
Absolutely. There's no question. They'll reclaim them all, as well they should. Those guys.
And Cam Spencer. How about Cam Spencer?
Yeah, it's going to be tougher. Let's rank them. Paul immediately, Cliff immediately, Moat, soon after that. Spencer, then he's UConn now. He's a UConn player now, I think.
Yeah. Dan Hurley showed up at a Rutgers game for his Rutgers contributions.
It's going to be a point. Cam Spencer is going to win. He's going to win the Nobel Prize for some physics or something. He's going to be former Rutgers basketball player, wins Nobel Peace Prize for peace in Middle East. Oh, yeah. Who's that? Oh, it's Cam Spencer again.
There'll be 27 Twitter replies saying nobody cares.
Come on. You don't care about that guy.
500,000 people will read the story.
Former Rutgers basketball player, elected president. All right. That's enough. So
let's say in a hypothetical world where Cam Spencer is still in college. Let's say Rutgers hosted both Cam Spencer and Gavin Griffiths in separate games. Who would be booed louder?
Ooh, I don't know. Good question. I like to think the fans would show restraints in both categories. But if they had to boo one, I'm going to go with Gavin. I think that the reason for that is that he said he was going to stay. I think that there's that message board, that quote to Jerry Carino about, I'm never going to be in the portal. Like that stuck with people wrong. It was an immature thing for him to say, certainly. And it's sad to hold it against him, but I think that would be the reason that he'd get booed. Do you agree?
The vitriol for Cam Spencer is so profound in the Rutgers fan base that it's gotten to the point where if there's any mention of Cam Spencer on NJ.com, a tweet, anything, it's like just burn the building to the ground.
Is it that it's any mention or it's been like 273 mentions? Is that which one is it that might be the reason?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to defend the fan base a little bit.
I still think it's because this Rutgers invented Cam Spencer, right? They gave him this opportunity to show that he could be a big time Division I basketball player, and then he used Rutgers as a stepping stone.
We created you. We made you. You forget about us.
Oh, so you got Cam, Pat? You'd say
I'll say Cam. Yeah, I'll say Cam. Because at the end of the day, Gavin Griffiths was his role here was very great. He didn't live up to the potential. Cam Spencer was tremendous, right? His contribution was huge. So I think, I'm going to stick with Cam.
I agree. I think if Nebraska plays at Rutgers next year, Gavin Griffiths will get booed. I don't know if it'll be wholehearted. I think some people will do it because they feel it. I think some people will do it because they feel like they should. It's like the fan thing to do. I think people legitimately dislike Cam Spencer. Maybe because we wrote 7,000 things about him. Maybe because he left so late and left the season kind of dangling because of how late he left. But I do think people would boo Cam Spencer with the hatred of 1,000 suns if he ever showed up at the rack. So I'll go with
Cam. And you could not get Cam Spencer off your television for freaking 2.5 months in March, right? Like every day you're reminded of it over and over and over again. So, yeah.
You turn to the Rutgers rant, you think you're going to have a nice Monday stroll through the park. You're not going to hear Cam Spencer. And then you throw your phone across the park because these NJM guys can't stop talking about Cam Spencer.
Don't do it for 20 minutes. You'd be in the podcast. No, dude, I was in there to get to listen to I want to hear more about the Rutgers Miler. And all they did, it was all Cam Spencer. I tuned in because I wanted to hear more about Northern Arizona's track success. This has gone off the rails. Oh, man, you suck. All right.
This would have been the moment to have a video of a video. This was it. We blew it.
All right. That's a good note. On that note, should we end? All right. We'll be back. We'll be back after the spring game to recap that one. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.